And welcome to another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I hope we can get these tape decks working because they don't seem to be connected here. Calling technical support. Hey, anybody out there, come on into the studio and give us a hand. However, for the rest of you, we're tuned to, hopefully you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, or on the net, www.microradio.net/FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Call-in number here, should you wish to reach us, and we're going to be going for 3.5 hours on this January 20th, 2002 edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Phone number here is 427-3772 or 831-427-3772. If you're calling from out of the area, listening to us from somewhere else than locally, hey, we welcome national, international, out-of-state, and out-of-city callers. So let us know what's happening in your area. Got some updates actually from Japan today, which I'm going to be reading to you, and lots of stuff to play on the tape recorder if I can get the tape deck to work. We'll give it another try and see how we're doing, but it looks like nothing's coming through as of yet. So we're going to give you the kind of the outline of the show as it's planned, and hope we can get some technical assistance to get the tape decks working. The subjects we're going to be covering today are various, and some of them, most of them have been touched on before in past shows, but got new stuff and important stuff. First thing we were going to talk about and discuss and play interviews with, lots of interesting stuff happening, was the hippie planter situation, and we're going to be doing that. Let's take this call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi. This is Robert.
It is.
This is Eric Schmidt.
Eric.
I'm out here at Harbin Hot Springs out in Middleton.
Wow, long distance from Harbin.
Yeah, it's okay. I got 35 minutes.
Excellent. Well, you know, I guess that we should brief the folks who weren't at the last show. We do a twice-weekly show here at Free Radio on civil rights for the homeless, and you gave us a really extensive update on your struggle to retain your free speech, right of petition, right of assembly at the University of California here at Santa Cruz, and
yes,
how you were hassled and actually pepper-sprayed, handcuffed, and dragged off for presenting a petition and a display to, I guess, the Farm Project last
April. 17th.
Last April.
Yeah.
And you went to court on Friday?
Yeah, I went to court on Friday. And you remember you asked me why it's been taking so long?
Mm-hmm.
It's because the prosecution has had 3 continuances.
They're trying to get
their...
The
last meeting, the prosecutor and the cop didn't even show up. And since they didn't know, since they couldn't ask the prosecutor if the cop was subpoenaed, continued again,
why isn't what judge is this before?
Jacobs.
Jacobs. Is this a?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You mean Joseph?
Joseph.
Yeah, Commissioner Joseph. I don't see why he's allowing these continuances. Please, you have a right to a trial within a reasonable period of time. You should pull your time waiver. Demand the public defender pull your time waiver, which means, you know, requires trial within 45 days is my, you know, I mean, I usually do that as a matter of course because I think that, you know, that's the best way to, frankly, overburden a court system that exists to harass, you know, folks with small quantities of drugs, homeless people, poor people. There's a lot of class legislation that is going through routinely that should be stopped in this whole court system. Who's your crew public defender?
Diane August.
I don't know what she's doing. Has she explained to you why she's letting all these continuances happen?
Well, she tries to get it dismissed at each one, but, you know.
Well, the thing she needs to do is to demand
the judge's discretion, really.
What?
What he's going to do.
It's not the judge's discretion. You have the right to a jury trial within 45 days. If they don't try you, they have to drop the charges. That's the law. So I don't know why she's let this go on for a year. This is another example of the public pretender system, as far as I'm concerned. These are people...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous. But
yeah,
again, you know, I haven't got your file in front of me. I don't know. She may have some considerations that I'm unaware of, but it sounds pretty bad. I mean, unless it sounds like you have to come from out of the area to come back to town to deal with this stuff, and it's a constant, you know, anxiety for you.
Yeah, I wrote the judge a letter about how I thought you know, how all this was like an abusive process in order to defraud the public, not the faculty housing that there's.
And let's remind the public of what happened. You were trying to present a petition at the farm to up at the University of California's farm project.
Petition for the ecological integrity of the UCSC Farm and Garden Project in the 21st century.
Right.
Basically for improvements there that haven't taken place over the last 30 years, like for making the program longer and provide housing or semi-permanent housing like teepees or yurts for the apprentices. Use wind, solar generated electricity in order to set ecological example. Allow apprentices to have individual agricultural projects. Create more volunteer staff positions from second year apprentices and qualified people. Conserve and treat human waste for agricultural purposes and composting toilets. Create an agricultural resource that does not compete unfairly with local small farmers who have to pay for their land, water, and energy. Return animals to the farm project that help establish biodynamic practices and traditional practices, agricultural practices. Develop more permanent garden beds at the farm and garden. Plant more trees and shrubs at the farm and garden. No storing or using toxic chemicals in the laboratory or anywhere at the farm project. Pay for the above changes using apprentice fees, soliciting public support. Grow organic food for UC students. They presently get their food from the same company that supplies the prison system. You probably know the name of that company. And
I don't, but I've heard about it.
Yeah. Live up to the ideals, definition, and practice of sustainable agricultural agroecology as outlined above, becoming more sensitive to the needs of the earth and its people and the original ecological aims and goals of the Farm and Garden Project.
Yeah, I'm always noting that as an advocate for the rights of homeless people, the Homeless Garden Project, which is much heralded in the media, and the city touts it as a big jewel, and it, you know, it's got this significant budget. You know, it doesn't provide any food to homeless people, you know, other than it pays, you know, rather small salaries to the people who work on the project, the small number of homeless people who do. It sells food to middle-class people, and it sounds like the farm project doesn't, you know, assist, but essentially exploits student labor. I mean, I'm guessing, because I don't know, you know, what's going on. I'm wondering.
Yeah, they use apprentice labor, and then they sell most of the food to the staff and the faculty there, the community-supported agriculture. And I think when this housing project goes in, the farm project will basically be a kitchen garden for the housing project and the faculty and the rich administrators that will move in there to their private little housing, because it's going to be private housing, I guess.
Now, have you tried to talk to, write about, to City on a Hill about this, a letter, or any of the student publications on campus?
I had published my petition in City on the Hill.
And what was the response to that?
Well, it's this write-in petition that where you cut out the petition from the paper and send it to the chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I could give the chancellor's address if people wanted to write the chancellor and write about what they think of the
thing. Go ahead.
It's MRC Greenwood. Chancellor. It's 296 McHenry Library, UCSC, Santa Cruz, California, 95064.
Now, how can people support you at your, again, kind of recapping, you came on campus with a display and permission from the people who, or let's put it this way, no objection from the people who are at the farm project. And when you got there, 5 minutes after you began setting up, by your account, police arrived, demanded you leave, and then grabbed you when you continued to set up your display, and forced you down, pepper sprayed you, handcuffed
you into the car.
And dragged you into the car, and then held you for how many hours?
And the handcuff, that was, they put it on so tight that it cut into my wrist, and I begged them to loosen the handcuff.
Right, this is the UCSC
torture,
police.
Really.
So, you know, it sounds like the right of petition. I know that when Huff member Becky Johnson was on campus on Friday trying to table, with the permission of CalPERG, the campus-endorsed group up there for Students Against the Sleeping Ban, another campus-acknowledged group, through a student, Steve Weiss, she was told by one of the women in, I guess, Virginia, in the bookshop Santa Cruz, to leave. She couldn't be there, she was told. She was sitting at an empty table out front that nobody needed to use. that was just simply there, and that she had the permission of the groups. So there's this repressive mentality. I call it a fascist mentality. You see it downtown against street people. You see it in the city council against activists who are, you know, simply trying to get oral communications time or raise a sign in the back. Or, you know, occasionally you'll get a Nazi salute from the back of the room when the council is repressive, and that is used as the basis for expelling someone for somehow offending Jewish people, which is ridiculous because some of us are Jewish who are giving the salute, indicating we feel the council is repressive. So, you know, it is, I think, a fascist climate here, and I think that it's, of course, heightened by this September 11th hysteria hoopla, you know, which is used to, you know, ignore the entire prior political situation where we have an illegitimate president and we have a system increasingly dominated by a few corporations, you know, jobs fleeing overseas, a city council here and locally afraid, terrified to take even so little a stand as against the bombing of Afghanistan. I mean, to me, it's a bad picture.
Yeah, did you know the UC manager, financial managers, invested hundreds of millions of dollars in that Enron corporation? Now they have nothing to show for it. You know, if they had read my petition and put in wind generators on all their land, they could have been self-sufficient and, you know, producing power, you know.
You know, I think that's a good point. If you have good documentation of that, I suggest you write a letter to
the newspapers.
Right, I suggest you put that documentation in a brief, under 250-word letter to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and then refer in passing to the fact that you were arrested on campus for a petition, and mention your next court date, which, by the way, is when?
Well, on Tuesday, they're going to decide whether it's going to be dismissed or not, based on whether the cop was subpoenaed or not.
Well, my suggestion to you is...
I have to come back in 2 weeks.
For the hearing again. Next Tuesday or 2 weeks from Tuesday?
Next Tuesday, they're just going to find out if the police officers were subpoenaed. And then,
I encourage you to call your public defender on Monday and tell her quite simply, I would like you to withdraw my time waiver. I want a speedy trial within 45 days, period.
Yeah.
You know, again, I'm not going to trial. I'm not risking jail. You're being charged with, what, 4 counts or something?
Yeah, I had brought all my evidence. You know, I have this bulletin board that I was putting my...
Before you tell me about... Eric, before you tell me about that, you're being charged with 4 counts?
4 counts. Down to 3 counts.
What are they?
Resisting arrest, battery on a police officer, and something harassing customers or something.
Oh, trespass with intent to interfere with a business, perhaps?
Yeah, that's
the one that they arrested me for twice at the farmer's market before they dropped it, if it's the same charge. You know, I would encourage you immediately to, you know, get in touch with August before, you know, Tuesday. Leave her, in fact, give her a written note that says, I am instructing you as my public defender, I want you to pull my time waiver, period. Uh-huh. You know, unless you can give me a very good reason and you want to spend enough time discussing with me other than the 10 seconds you may give to your clients in the courtroom corridors before you make them trek down again another, I don't know how many miles you come every time for these court appearances.
Well, my witness has been subpoenaed twice and, you know, they've shown up and then they have to go away without, you know.
It's outrageous. You know, you should do a civil lawsuit. Of course, unfortunately, the courts and the police department are often not liable, but I would suggest a civil lawsuit against the UCSC. You might
try to take them to small claims court.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You won't necessarily get any money, but you can publicize the case, and you can, you know, put them on notice that this kind of stuff will not go without some kind of, you know, response.
Yeah, I had my evidence on display in the hall of the courtroom there.
Mm, right.
Some sheriff comes out of the blue and says, "You can't display your evidence. You got to turn that to the wall." You know, and
are you kidding?
First time I ever heard of a cop afraid of evidence.
Oh no! Did you turn it to the wall?
Well, the wall was a window facing the house, so...
I see. So that was okay. Yeah, that's outrageous. I mean, you can bring whatever... You know, it's a free speech situation unless you're trying to influence a jury, and there's no jury trying your case, so I think that's outrageous. Again, you know, it's the fascist mentality. You walk through the metal detector, and they have you take off all metallic objects that make you go back and forth until the little beeper doesn't stop, you know, until it stops, that is. I don't know. I mean, I'm told that some people support this kind of fascist stuff, and that's what it is. It's police state stuff. You know, you're assuming innocent people are guilty and have to be inconvenienced and treated as suspects because of the violence of a few prompted by the incredible violence of the government and the imperialist system we're under. I mean, it's outrageous. I'm not justifying, by the way, the violence of a bunch of you know, fundamentalist fanatics. They're absurd and they're ridiculous. But I'm also not going to spend a lot of time, you know, justifying the government. I'm going to spend no time justifying the government. The government needs to go.
Violent terrorist police officers, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, see, again, it's ordinary human beings are turned into official terrorists by a system that endorses, condones, and supports this. And ironically, of course, does so in the name of stopping terrorism. It's just incredible. And it's something that people need to get together and challenge as articulately and as in as visible a way as they can. And you know, it's interesting. There was a challenge that happened at Hippie Planter on, I guess it was day before yesterday. Six police officers came and tried to stop this man from playing his Christian music. It was apparently music from a Christian boombox, not very loud, I'm told, because the authorities have taken to playing loud classical music through speakers designed to drive away young people who they think won't like the classical music. They've been doing this for the last day or two at Hippie Planter. So when this fellow played his classical music, I mean, he played his Christian music, you know, Christian versus classical, that sort of thing, six police officers came and demanded he turn it off, and he said no. And, you know, there was this apparently large confrontation. I've got a couple interviews on it. We'll be playing that later. Anyway, we're talking with Eric Schmidt, who is still in the toils of the so-called justice system.
I'm waiting to get my 60 photographs back, my 68 by 10 color photographs. They held them for 9 months. Is that a free society? You know, it's ridiculous.
No. And I think what you need to do is, I think what all of us need to do is, regardless of whether we agree with your issue or not, the process that's being used here to harass a person for basic constitutionally protected activity shows that none of us are safe. That's the real lesson here. Eric, is there a number people can reach you at?
Sure. It's 530, it's long distance, 530-627-3713.
One more time.
530-627-3713.
All right.
I wish people would write the chancellor and say, you know, what's going on with the housing project and the farm project and the arboretum.
Right. Well, they know where to call. I mean, again, this is not my issue on the show, so I'm not going to focus on it particularly. But it's been mentioned, and my issue is indeed how you're being treated as a person in terms of your human rights violations, and how people who are petitioning with what may be an unpopular position—I don't know—I haven't researched this particular issue, but you know, I think you certainly should have a right to express your views without being jacked up by police and brutalized, and then being dragged through a court system with the obvious intent of discouraging you further.
It's not just me. There's other people that have petitions other than mine, and they were different ones from the Arboretum, and they weren't even allowed to present their petition at the public hearing that they had last year.
Well, you need to get together with those people and form some kind of a coalition, is my suggestion. In fact, I suggest you come, and I'm inviting other people, by the way, at 7 o'clock tonight at 315 Mission Street. There is a meeting of, a new coalition of progressive groups is forming, and we're talking real progressives here, people who are concerned with real civil rights issues, not SCAN, you know, although I suppose there's some members of SCAN if they want to do something about the incredible abuses that are going on with the Santa Cruz Action Network, which elected our city council. That's happening at 7 o'clock tonight at 315 Mission. And for more information, I would encourage you to call. I'll take the liberty of giving out his... you should call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave a message there. But again, the thing to do is just show up at 7 o'clock tonight at 315 Mission Street. That's my suggestion, if you're in town. But it sounds like you're not.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going back for my son's birthday. You know, they wanted me to come back on Tuesday. Well, they didn't want me to come back, but I might have been able to give a statement if my case was dismissed.
Listen, I got to go. I appreciate, Eric, you're giving me all this information. And, hey, keep me advised, keep me updated, and pull your time waiver.
Okay, thank you, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And we are still having problems with our equipment here. I think we're going to have a brief musical break while I attempt to hotwire the system and perhaps blow up the entire studio. Hang on.
only one reason. Their president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism? Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me?
You're tuned again to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Bathrop's Piers Broadside's coming at you this Sunday, January 20th. We have technical problems in the studio, but we are not giving up here. We're going to be proceeding. You can call in and join the conversation on the air, 427-3772, and we will be attempting to do some interviews on the air. Today's Sentinel has some interesting stuff in it. Not news, of course. The Sentinel isn't known for news. It's actually not known for much of anything except of being a highly priced Monopoly paper downtown that is too expensive to use for fish wrap or bird cages. However, in the community forum section of today's Sentinel, there is an interesting article by Kim Bingham, Santa Cruz resident, she's described. I'm not sure who she is. Who knows? Maybe I've met her in the past, or him. I'm not sure if it's a woman or a man. I guess it's a woman, looking at the context of the story. The article is titled Rise Up and Take Back Downtown Santa Cruz. And it's interesting. I'm going to read some of it because I think, You don't usually find this in Sentinel editorials except when either Becky Johnson or I sneak our editorials into these columns on civil rights for the homeless downtown. It gives an interesting perspective. My husband and I are lifelong Santa Cruz residents who just returned from almost a year in New York. I must say we were practically drooling to get back to our hometown after months of hearing New York City's homeless and subway performers referred to as little more than a roach infestation after endless times of being asked what nationality our last name was, Bingham, because we might be Russian and you know how Russian people are, or having to have our Santa Cruz ears offended by the frequently heard queer or fag in reference to anything not quite mainstream. As Santa Cruzans, we basically just couldn't take it anymore. If we had to starve to be able to afford a house, so be it, and back we came. And the first place we wanted to see when we got off the freeway? Downtown. Our glorious, colorful, friendly downtown. Oh, sure, we wanted to spend a few hours in the bookshop and maybe splurge for something cool from ID, but what we couldn't wait to see, what I really deep down missed the most, was our street people. The musicians and panhandlers that made up the diverse fabric of our uniquely wonderful community. The whole time we were in New York, I kept thinking to myself, if these people could just see how it is in Santa Cruz, how the street people are really so much a wonderful part of our community, they would be shamed into becoming more tolerant. And tolerance is really what Santa Cruz is all about. Or was. As a child in Santa Cruz, I rode public transportation to get to and from school for more than 7 years. In that time, I sat next to many of the people the Downtown Association would like to wipe off out of our city. I was given cosmetic advice by transvestites, book recommendations by a professor, and once listened to a man tell me how, after his wife and child were killed in a car crash, he saved his life by coming to Santa Cruz, a place where he felt accepted in his misery, a place where he could heal. How often did I hear, "Hey, are you going to eat that sandwich?" Sharing my food and good fortune with those in need became second nature to me and to my peers. As a child, I learned to respect these people, to admire their unique challenges, and to appreciate the contributions they did indeed give to our community. But it wasn't until I lived somewhere else that I truly came to appreciate the real gift they gave me, the gift of tolerance. Apparently, however, while we were away, tolerance was run over by the Lexus SUV of so-called progress. Yes, our street people were there, but they looked like beaten dogs, scared to even let their music be heard for fear of, what, fewer parking garages? We were in shock. Then the Sentinel, the Santa Cruz paper of all things, officially comes out with the opinion that shop owners, by virtue of their ability to turn a buck, are contributing more to the community than anyone else. Let me ask one question no one has apparently considered. Does money make a community? Well, sure it does. Just look at that nifty little community that money made out of Capitola Village. Used to be the people who lived here would go down there for a slice of pizza in my heart and a browse through Aries Arts. There was music and laughter and, yes, panhandlers. Old Joe, a man the Sentinel would now say contributed nothing by virtue of the fact that he had no obvious employment, taught us kids how to fish off the pier and to respect the ocean. When he died, he was extolled by the local media, including the Sentinel, for his contributions to our community. Then money came along. Shop owners decided they wanted everyone out except for shoppers. Correction, shoppers with lots of money. Now Capitola Village is a wonderful, clean, quiet little community. Only it's for tourists, not us. Not the actual community. The people who are annoyed by the street people downtown are primarily people who come here toting their intolerance from other places. They are scared by what is different, and like all intolerant people, they want what is different to go away. Many of these people spend their week working in Santa Clara County, and on the weekend, they would prefer to have their own little slice of Saratoga right here so they don't have to drive over 17. Or they want the sterile environment of Los Gatos, where the only way to prove you aren't just hanging out is to make sure your khakis have nice creases and your polo shirt isn't stained. As for the shop owners, I think there is some very un-American pressure being put on all businesses by the Downtown Association. I know for a fact that they are making it difficult for any business that might sell to colorful people to be on Pacific Avenue. Do they care if doctors also meditate? That CEOs might practice yoga? No, not if it means putting a store like that right out in the open where mainstream shoppers might be subjected to something different. Now we have, and I really must say I nearly fainted at that sight, mall stores like those that sell overpriced, mass-produced paintings. What's next? Mervyn's? I'm not alone in wondering if the As We See It piece in Wednesday's paper wasn't maybe tongue-in-cheek. What sane person would write that sidewalk space, benches, and planter boxes encourages the gathering of idlers, quote-unquote? Shall we rip them out, get rid of the plants, and make narrow walkways only wide enough for a person and their wallet? Maybe in the future, people shopping downtown can wear little credit card statements pasted to their foreheads so everyone knows that they have a good reason to be down there. I have logged more hours downtown than many of the people complaining about street people have logged in the entire city of Santa Cruz, and I have never once, not even one time, felt threatened or truly offended by anyone downtown. That is, until now. I am deeply offended by the way the very foundation of Santa Cruz is being threatened by the idiotic idea that those with the most money should make the rules. I am horrified by the idea that we should whitewash our community so people don't have to drive to Palo Alto to be pompous and narrow-minded. I can't be the only person who isn't shopping downtown because I am depressed by the overall absence of joy down there, but lest my absence be taken as a sign that I am somehow offended by my fellow Santa Cruzans, I am taking my almighty dollar right back downtown. But I won't spend a dime without making sure that the shop owner knows that I am only there because of the colorful people who have contributed more to Santa Cruz than any store or shopper ever could hope to contribute. And as the Sentinel pointed out, those who actually contribute to our community deserve much better. Take back downtown. Now, wouldn't that make a cool sticker to put on every check and dollar that we spend on Pacific Avenue? That is in today's Sentinel, Rise Up and Take Back Downtown Santa Cruz by Kim Bingham. Boy, I wish Kim Bingham would call into the show, and if I had a way to reach her, I would. I'd ask her to give a call and let her know that we read her very good piece on the air. The Sentinel costs $1.50 on Sundays. I bought it today. I think I got my money's worth. Not with anything else, of course, but with that. And I really appreciate Kim Bingham's letter. And, of course, it ties in with one of the key themes we've been discussing, which is the City Council's sellout of public space downtown, which was what the Sentinel was writing about in the editorial Kim Bingham is responding to get rid of Hippie Planter, the folks in front of New Leaf Market.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert, it's Eleanor.
Hey, Eleanor, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, speak up a little bit, we have a little trouble hearing you.
Okay, how's that?
That's pretty good.
Okay.
You know, I was about to read a press release. Have you been listening to the show?
Just tuned in, and I was listening to the letter that you were reading.
Do you want to comment on that? Because I know that I'm going to actually be talking about another a subject that you have recently have been victorious in, essentially maintaining your residency in the face of repressive and retaliatory eviction activity by Mercy Housing California.
Yes.
But you want to talk about that or something else?
I'll talk about that. I promised on Thursday that I would call back today.
Indeed, and in fact, I have that ready. But in case you wanted to talk about, we are going to talk about that. I want to read, if you are going to discuss that, this press release written by Becky Johnson.
Oh, and is that the one regarding the issue?
It is regarding the issue about Mercy Housing.
Oh, I'd like to hear that because I'm so appreciative that she sent it, and I
right. But
are
you, but
seen
do,
it.
Do you want to talk about this other issue first? I guess you. I mean, are you responding to the Santa Cruz Sentinel editorial, or are you just
no,
calling?
No, I was
okay.
calling.
Good enough. Well, let me read you this. I mean, I can either read it to you on the
yes,
air, or
yes, go
would
ahead.
You like it on the phone?
Sure.
Okay. This is a press release issued by Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and written by activist Becky Johnson. Mercy Housing shows no mercy. Santa Cruz nonprofit affordable housing agency challenged by a woman in wheelchair it sought to evict, and this is dated the 18th. So it looks like it was after your victory. Santa Cruz, California. Mercy Charities Housing has its offices in Santa Cruz. Former city planner Ed Davidson charged that Mercy Charities Housing Dolphin Lee Project has cut so many corners, it's now officially a circle. The nonprofit affordable housing developer and management agency has been accused of keeping insider lists for its rentals, of costing too much money, of making promises and then not delivering, of being sheltered from competitive bidding on all new projects, and now critics are upset about what seems to be petty cruelty. In Judge Robert Addick's courtroom, 12 jurors considered testimony from Mercy Services Corporation, the management branch of Mercy Charities Housing. Mercy Services Corporation Vice President Steve Farmer testified that wheelchair-bound Eleanor Foresta, and that's you, and her 30-year companion and caretaker Robert Preet, thank you. Sorry there, Robert, had given their 30-day notice when they signed an agreement to move into a different apartment that would better suit Ms. Foresta's needs. Foresta and Preet reside at Sycamore Commons, a subsidized housing project that was both built and managed by Mercy Services Corporation.
I sent in my 30-day notice on November 5th, Ms. Foresta told the jury. Then on November 15th, the whole deal fell through. She immediately contacted the management of the Sycamore Commons housing complex and attempted to rescind the 30-day notice, but Mercy ended up insisting she and Preet move out, whether they have another place to move to or not. Mercy doesn't like people who stand up for their rights, said local attorney Ed Fry, who represented Foresta and Preet. Ed Fry asked Foresta if her lease required her to show the apartment to prospective tenants. Yes, she replied. Did anyone ever contact you because they wanted to show it to a prospective tenant? Never. Foresta had filed a series of complaints during her residency. She reported that the handicapped units are directly beneath family units, the stairways vibrate when people go up and down the stairs, and that the sound insulation between the apartments was inadequate. They used the cheapest materials for all their construction, Preet told reporters. If you went down to the hardware store and priced every material in here, they all would be the least expensive. Frustrated over insoluble problems with design elements with her unit, Foresta and Preet searched for an apartment that would suit Foresta's unique medical needs. Confined to a wheelchair due to an injury that she suffered at her workplace, Foresta suffers neurological impairment, which cripples her and makes her hypersensitive to sound and vibrations. And the playground is right next to the handicapped apartments, Foresta added with frustration. Fry had presented the case as a retaliatory eviction, but Judge Attic ruled that that could not apply because Ms. Foresta initiated the 30-day notice to quit. However, Mercy Charity's employee, Rosa Jimenez, testified she accepted Foresta's monthly rental payment on December 1st and provided a receipt. Mercy's position was that they were evicting Eleanor and Robert not because they need the apartment and not because they were bad tenants, but because they could, said Robert Norse of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Eleanor and Robert would have been made homeless if Mercy was successful, and they would have been rid of a couple of squeaky wheels. Mercy Housing, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy rejected four potential jurors who were landlords, property owners, or had tenants, reported Foresta. Those people know about bad tenants. We were not bad tenants, and they would know that. Mercy did not want them. We had this jury, and they heard all this evidence, and they realized the landlord had waived his right to evict because he took her money, said Fry. Mercy was ill-advised to take this case, given this set of facts. Fry estimated Mercy spent $5,000, and the city, of course, pays Mercy over $60,000 a year, that's coming out of some of your taxpayer money, folks, trying to evict Foresta and Preet, despite the fact that they are actively looking for another place and will move as soon as they find it. The jury found in favor of Foresta and Preet. This is HUD housing, explained Fry. Now they can stay where they are on a permanent basis, absent good cause for eviction. This lawyer, James Almeida, and Steve Farmer, Vice President of Mercy, what a name for them. They were both malicious, kicking a woman confined to a wheelchair out in the cold in the dead of winter for no good cause at all, simply because she gave her notice. This is press release, Mercy Housing Shows No Mercy. Well,
excellent, well written. Ms. Johnson does it again.
Well, I think you're a partisan person in this case, but
true. But she got the facts really well. There's a couple of things that I would like to clarify.
Sure.
One of them is that they did accept my withdrawal of the 30-day notice. The property manager did in fact accept it, saying, "Well, we'll just have to start the 30 days over again when the time comes."
And then they claimed that they...
Well, it was Steve Farmer. Yes, they claimed. Actually, what happened was Steve Farmer came along and had his own ideas and flexed.
The bosses wanted to get rid of you, so they told the lower employee, even though you said so, we're not going to accept it.
Exactly. And they had the two employees on the stand lying and trying to cover up for Mr. Farmer. But it didn't work because the jury saw through it. We won on two counts. We won on the one count that, yes, they did accept my withdrawal of the 30-day notice and the fact that they accepted my rent and kept it. They kept it through this whole time.
Right, so you didn't even have access to your money. They didn't say, here,
That's
take
right.
your rent back. They
That's
said,
right, because it was a money order, which Robert purchased, so the funds were there.
So Mercy Charity's attorney, who obviously doesn't need the money since Mercy Charities gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions, in fact, for its projects, was simply trying, again, another pressure tactic on you.
Exactly. And another factor here, too, prior to, you know, there's a lot of motions and orders and things that go on before the judge, before the trial begins. And Mercy's attorney said he didn't want any mention, any direct mention of the fact that, Mercy housing is subsidized. And, of course, he got his way. And the reason being is that the jury are taxpayers. And if they realize directly, which I'm sure they did indirectly anyway, because there was a lot of testimony about recertification and the low rent itself would tell you that it's a giveaway, but he still didn't want any testimonies, any mention of it to go down. It was to be stricken. And the reason being that he didn't want the jury to know that Mercy is subsidized with tax dollars, and this is what they're doing with the tax dollars. This would anger the jury, because the jury's members are taxpayers. And they take a look at this and they say, gee, this is what we're all for subsidized housing. We want people like the Forestas and the Preets and people like this of our city and our county to be allowed to have an opportunity to be housed. This is what subsidized housing is all about. But Mercy takes the money and gives it to their lawyer to try and throw out the person that they initiate bad faith actions, bad faith lawsuits.
You know, and even more important, Doctor, there are two considerations I note here. One is that you were an activist who was, you were acting to, you know, make sure that the Mercy kept its requirements in terms of its HUD contract, in terms of the Americans with Disabilities Act, to make sure that that was a habitable unit for you, but not just for you. It would seem to me that in so doing, you would put them in a position where they would also have to respond to the concerns of other people in your situation in a wheelchair or who were disabled. And so they were not only attacking you, they were attacking all whistleblowers. They were attacking all people who are standing up for their rights in the Mercy Charities housing complex.
Exactly. This shows you just how mean-spirited the organization.
You know what I think it shows, Eleanor, is it certainly shows that, but it shows the kind. It also shows the kind of arrogance that these officials have. They feel the city council just routinely rubber stamps their proposals one after another. They had Fitzmaurice as mayor, who could do no wrong.
I know. I remember him getting up and leaving the council chambers when you made mention during oral communications that these people were not as they appeared.
Yeah, I was asking about the connections between Mercy Charities Housing, their oversight group, the Sisters of Mercy, a Catholic group, and that's fine. There are a lot of good Catholic charities, but also there are some bad ones. Catholic Healthcare West takes over hospitals and just denies women the right to choose, and they are doing that all over the country, or at least all over the state. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I thought was worth at least a look-see, but, you know, Fitzmaurice shouted that I was, he didn't shout, he snarled, is probably the way to say it. He snarled that I was an anti-Catholic bigot and walked out of the room. I won't listen to this bigotry.
Well, you know. I'm Catholic myself, and so is Robert.
Huh.
And my attorney is Catholic. So, you know, they got a problem here with us to try and say that we're anti. We are. The problem here is they're hiding behind a religion. This isn't what religion is all about. This is, you know, they're using their religion to get in. And they're not as they appear. And I hope. I don't have the energy to go back to city council again. I may.
No, don't even think of going back to city council. They are a group that is useless. It's the community that
community
we have
people.
To appeal to. And I'm not sure that, you know, the proper channels to use, because Free Radio, of course, does have an audience, and I'm glad people are listening to it, but we are limited.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the thing to do, I don't know what the thing to do is, but just discussing this issue, the arrogance of these officials stems from the fact that they are the monopoly service provider in Santa Cruz who can get whatever they want from the city council. They really can't. I mean, I am not exaggerating. And people who've been listening to my show, and this show's been on the air for 7 years, know the kind of regular, based on the regular reports of what Mercy Charities Housing is able to get at city council year after year with no dissent. There is actually one person, Mark Premack, has dissented.
with some gingerness. I mean, he's a little bit, you know, I mean, he's treading on sacred ground when you criticize Mercy Charities Housing, or Mercy Housing California, as they now call themselves. You know, they make it appear that you're attacking Latino residents in the beach flats, when in fact you're really defending Latino residents, because
exactly.
They're going to destroy the Dolphin Lee apartments just like they destroyed the Rex Court apartments. And they're going to be putting all the affordable housing money for the next 5 years and beyond into those apartments to create less units for... beforehand.
I know.
And it's outrageous. And of course, if they can do that, and they can do that so publicly, even though SCAN opposed this... And the Green Party demanded guarantees for the tenants before this proceed, and all these different groups spoke up for it, and they ignored it. You know, I mean, the council just sort of, including Mayor Christopher Crone,
yeah.
You know, just, you know, bent over and said, "Hey, do it to me. You know, fine, we're okay. You know, take all
no,
the public money for affordable housing."
They respect them, and they want to push it through, so they don't have to think about it. I mean, they just don't want to think about it. They want to get it done, and that's it. And
right. It's get done. This little affordable housing project is going to be their little shining jewel. But actually, it's of course a plum for Mercy Charities Housing.
Yeah, and it's going to be a blight for us. They aren't. You know
what I suggest you do?
Yes.
Go to the grand jury. Make a complaint to the grand jury. I actually met a grand juror downtown who suggested I do this, and starts filing complaints with the grand jury. File written complaints. You're very good at, you know, putting these matters in concise, legally clear terms. I would suggest a specific series of complaints to the grand jury about Mercy Charities Housing. I will do the same, because the other thing that Mercy Charities has been doing that is so outrageous, the city council has been pretty stupid in handing everything over to Mercy Charities Housing. I guess we can say that's the city council's stupidity. Mercy Charities has been illegally meeting behind closed doors in this Dolphin Lee project, even though it is meeting with an officer of the city council, the mayor in many cases, who votes, and it's a city council funded body. It should be open to the public. They have closed it down. That's a violation of the Brown Act. To challenge it in court, and you tried to help me do this last year, requires more resources, time, and commitment than I have. But a complaint to the grand jury would require them, if the grand jury takes it seriously and if it's sufficiently well documented, to explain it to the grand jury, which might be a little more difficult, and might not. They have, you know, these sweet singers like Elizabeth Vogel, who can just run in, and Seal Cirillo, the redevelopment agency, who pretties everything up, and, you know.
Yeah, and they just do not listen. I spoke with... The actual person who on the planning department who approved of the plan for Mercy Housing, because I wanted to get to the person who was responsible for some of the things that are wrong here. And one of them is this daycare center yard right outside my bedroom windows, mm-hmm. and the bedroom windows of other disabled people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nightmare here. It's 20 hours a week of screaming. This is not normal playground activity. This is a development, child development center that looks the other way. That they just, their minds are somewhere else. The people in charge, and these kids, they scream bloody murder 4 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Well, I also know you're trying to move out of there, and I wanted to ask you about that. I know that you have been successful in requiring Mercy Charities Housing to respect your tenancy.
Yes.
And of course, you've actually gotten the neighbors who were actively harassing you, some of them employees of Mercy Housing,
yes.
by essentially criminal prosecutions.
Yes.
You called the police, and then they stepped up their harassment campaign until the day that the judge ordered them to stop. And then you've had fairly good relations ever since.
Yes, it was very bad here. I was hounded. It was horrible.
But
we reached a point, if I may just say, that the police were saying, when you have to leave your apartment to go to your doctor's appointment, call us first and we'll escort you to the car.
Wow, interesting.
That's how bad it was.
That's the Santa Cruz Police Department, who doesn't have the most deep solicitude for poor people. And you're
Well, I have to tell you, I salute the police in this town. If it weren't for them, they would have made mincemeat out of me long ago. They have consistently responded appropriately the situation.
Well, I think part of that is because you are a well-spoken, articulate, attractive person who knows what she's talking about, who is able to express herself in a moderate tone of voice, who has the vocabulary, the education, and the skills to do so.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I mean, no, I'm not trying to flatter you. I'm saying that there are plenty of people who don't and who get treated like shit by the police. So I'm glad they're treating you right, and I hope they continue to do so. And I acknowledge and I want to put forward your commendation of their behavior, and
oh,
I find
gosh,
it.
Yes.
But what the point I was making, I guess.
Please do. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Was that you are going to be? You're trying to get into another apartment where the landlord tripled the rent, and that was the reason you got into this little problem with Mercy about the, you know, the rent check and so forth.
This is another HUD subsidized property. We've got two in the area. This one's in Capitola. We've got two.
What's the name of this group that are you? If you're
Accessible Space Incorporated.
And this is the group that initially were charging you the appropriate amount of money for the subsidized apartment,
yes.
And then suddenly tripled it, claiming that
10 days after they encouraged me to give my notice and gave me my final approval that I was in, I called to check to see how things were progressing, and that I found out that this is what they were going to do. And I have an action against them now,
mm-hmm.
Which I just got yesterday, a response from an attorney piped up finally, because I was hearing nothing from them. I did get an answer from an attorney who claims to be assisting them but not representing them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I have to prepare.
You have a court date coming up on that?
29th.
And where is that?
It's here in Santa Cruz.
Court, the department?
Gee, you know, offhand.
It's okay. When you figure it out, give us a call and let us know, because I think folks are interested in following this case.
Well, if I can believe what their answer says, which
uh-oh.
I can't believe, but anyway, it says Department 5, but I'm not certain.
At what time?
9 a.m., but I thought it was 8:30, so I have to check my records, because...
This is on January...
29th.
Okay, yes. We're talking to Eleanor Foresta, who has successfully fought back an eviction from Mercy Housing. She's a disabled person in a wheelchair who actually was ready to leave the apartment but needed a little extra time because the other new landlord jacked up the rent, and she's taking that new landlord to court to stop the jacking of the rent. But Mercy Housing, instead of being sympathetic, the lower folks who were sympathetic, they did offer to put aside the 30-day notice, but the higher-up, Steve Farmer, and the guy who was running the place, decided that they wanted to get rid of Eleanor because she's been advocating for their standardizing their apartments. They've been having substandard conditions for people who are disabled. It's interesting. They like to criticize the Dolphin Lee apartments for being substandard, but Mercy Housing apparently has its own problems with standards.
I'm glad you brought that up, Robert, because I believe all you're going to end up seeing is what you see here, something that looks visually attractive as people go by, but those that are inside living in it are living in hell.
Interesting. You know, it's sort of like the appearance. This is, to me, again, I've been talking about fascism running the country or sweeping the country or being this new model that's being used without being called fascism, of course. Everything looks pretty, you know, the happy children of Germany marching into the future. But underneath, of course, you don't get to see, you hear the cries of pain or see the repression. It's these fixed smiles. Of course, everybody's a little nervous and they don't want to be too critical of this and that.
Yes.
It's afraid
to speak up.
It's really important when people like you speak up, and I hope you're successful at this court appearance. I should also mention that you were homeless for several years.
4 years. 1 month.
I mean, I met you in your vehicle. You were going from church parking lot to church parking lot.
That's correct. We kept in compliance with the Santa Cruz
sleeping ban.
At all times, we were hosted by gracious churches.
Here's a point I want to bring up. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's fine. Go ahead.
When you stayed in churches, you stayed there for several months at a time, right?
Oh, got one for 2 years, yeah.
Right. Now, in fact, in 1995, and we have to credit Scott Kennedy and Catherine Byers with this, although it was a drop in the bucket, it did provide you with a sanctuary. They made a change in the sleeping ban law, which said that church parking lots could take 3 vehicles for any amount, any length of time, with the permission of the church, of course.
Yes, written permission.
Written permission of the church, and that's what you did.
Mm-hmm.
There is an amendment to the camping ban coming up on Tuesday at City Council, which I'm going to discuss at greater length later. Actually, 2 amendments, or it's actually a series of changes in the wording which amount to 2 amendments. The First Amendment, and they're both by Kennedy, Premack, and Porter, they amount to, the better amendment is one that currently people in in parks. The park department, which gives, let's say, permits to the AIDS march that comes through every year, the AIDS walk,
mm-hmm.
to camp out. There's a provision in the current camping ban law, which the sleeping ban is embedded, that says that you can only do this 3 days per year, can a particular group camp in any one of the parks with a permit from the Parks and Rec Department, which requires liability, toilets, blah, 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 a whole series of conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get from Jim Lang, he hasn't returned my call, a list of all the groups that have gotten such permits in the last 10 years. I don't think many have. I think it's, you know, a bogus process. It was actually put into place when an activist successfully challenged it in court back in 1988, Linda Edwards. She was an activist. But that's another story. What's happening at the Tuesday City Council meeting is there's this amendment that will allow parks to, the Park and Recs Director to suspend this 3-day-a-year requirement for groups that are engaged in conservation and restoration activity. And that would be, of course, groups like Camp Paradise or the Santa Cruz Service Corps. And this would be the first concrete, if very small, move that would allow for an opening in the law. It doesn't allow Camp Paradise to have a camp. It allows the director to let them stay in one of these three parks. And the three parks are San Lorenzo Benchlands, De La Vega, Lower De La Vega Park, and Harvey West, all of which would be very hard because there would be massive protest from neighbors on each of those parks. So it's not really an attempt to deal with Camp Paradise because the city has plenty of city-owned property where there would be much less protest by neighbors. It's just the city is doing this because it's making these token efforts that it isn't really that concerned that it's going to have any real consequences. That's my interpretation of it. But the second thing, and this is the reason that I'm keeping you on the phone so long.
I can't wait to hear this. Please tell us.
The second amendment that the Kennedy, Premack, and Porter are bringing up on the Tuesday afternoon city council session, which starts at 3, for those of you who want to come down to it, and hot food will be provided, by the way, by HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. The second amendment is an amendment that will allow... It is a suspension of the so-called 3-day limit per month in church parking lots. Now, doesn't that sound a little strange to you?
There is no 3-day.
You
limit
got
per
it.
Month
there is no
lots.
3-day. It is a completely useless and pointless amendment. But there's more.
It's to make it look like they're doing something.
Well, it's actually worse than that. It's just a simple error. But you know what they're doing as well? They are saying that they are going to impose a 3-day limit on business parking lots and on backyards and side yards.
But don't they have the ones, the 3-day limit?
The only thing where there's a 3-day limit at the current time is the driveway of a residence.
Yes.
That was put in by our good Green Party former mayor.
And wasn't that a step backwards?
No, it was a step, well, it was a step forward in a certain sense. You weren't allowed to park in a driveway at all. Now, with the written permission of the owner and the tenant, you can stay there, but for no more than 3 days in any calendar month. And this came not from any kind of investigation of other cities. This came because Tim Fitzmaurice sort of noticed that there's a thing like a 72-hour notice for towing an abandoned vehicle, and he got the kind of, you know, lopsided idea that he should paste this on to that. That was back in 1999. Well, the 3-day-per-month restriction only refers to driveways. It's always been the case you can camp as long as you want in somebody's backyard or side yard. You can camp as long as you want in a church parking lot if they have their permission. But that means in a vehicle. You can't do it outside the vehicle. And, in fact, that's what we thought Kennedy was going to do, is introduce a resolution that would allow people to camp in church property without... not in a vehicle. That would be an expansion of the exemptions from the sleeping and camping ordinances. So he didn't do that. Although it has to also be said that there are claims that these are the first drips and drabs of a few changes in the camping and sleeping ban. So,
do you think that we can thank Scott Kennedy for this, for it even coming out?
I'm not about to thank him until I get a clear sense of what's going on here. I mean, see, there are two problems. It doesn't address the Camp Paradise need for a campground. You know, it just says if Jim Lang wants to, he can, if all these other conditions are met, and there's a whole bunch of them, and I'm going to read them later in the show.
Sure.
Maybe I should read them now.
Well, you know, I'd like to say, I'm going to get off the air to give other people an opportunity, but I would like to say one thing. They're still not addressing people who don't have vehicles, and this is the very sad.
Oh, yeah, 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people.
I mean, come on, it's bitter cold out there.
Right.
And people are out there sick in this cold. They have nowhere to go when they're sick. It's deplorable. And, you know, there's one quick thing I'd like to say here. We've talked about in the past about the type, the reasons why people become homeless and the makeup of the population of homeless. And we have said the majority of the people are disabled people that are homeless. 40% of all single men that are homeless are Vietnam veterans. But one thing I would like to say is we have in Santa Cruz County 4,000 mental patients. We have 400 beds. So if you wonder why you have a lot of people out there just standing there looking out into space or just sitting there beaten with pathetic looks on their face, many of them belong in hospitals and there's no room for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the facilities should be provided for those who want them or need them. But there's a move going on to force people to go into treatment facilities.
They'll never get away with that. That can be sued.
Right. Well, they're trying to change the law. They changed it in New York, and they changed it in other states, allowing needles on wheels to come around and force you to take medication and things of this sort. Supposedly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's happened in more than 40 states. That is
because
now the norm.
When I was in New York, there was something going on there where they were,
right.
Mayor Koch was saying, everyone's going to have a bed, nobody's going to be cold, and they forced a man in, and he sued me.
Yeah, that was a long time. That was in the 80s or the early 90s. You know, that now under Mayor Giuliani, and I guess there's a new mayor there now, you know, it's gotten much, much worse.
Oh.
Well, you heard this editorial that this woman was, had that, what's her name? Kim Bingham wrote.
Yes.
Well, listen, we've been talking to Eleanor Foresta, who has successfully won a lawsuit that an eviction by Mercy Housing is now trying to make sure that the landlord who she's trying to get into whose housing she's trying to get into, HUD subsidized, they should be, you know, willing to follow the law. They get enough profit out of it. Now they want to squeeze more money. Apparently, HUD is also trying to squeeze money out of this.
Let me tell you what the deal is there. When you rent a property in a HUD subsidized complex. Say the market rent is $1,200 for the apartment, and you pay 30% of your income. I'm just throwing figures out. Say that comes to $400 or $300 or $500, whatever it is a month that you have to pay. HUD subsidizes the balance up to the market value. When HUD subsidizes it, that portion of the money that comes from HUD doesn't come until the end of the year or whenever they make their payment.
To the landlord.
To the landlord, exactly. The landlord gets his monthly rent from the tenant, but has to wait for the money from HUD. If they can turn around and shake down the tenant somehow, then HUD is off the hook for that money. They're happy. They're not going to go along and see to it that they follow the rules. The landlord, that is, follows the rules. So the HUD is off the hook for a lot of money. And the landlord gets his money at the first of the month rather than a year later or whenever HUD. So it's a win-win for them. So you can't look to HUD to be support there because they stand to benefit. So we have to do, as I always say, take it to the people. Go to court and have a jury trial. And let your peers decide, is this the way the government intended it to be for you, or is this the way they're manipulating it for it to happen? And then, God willing, the jury sees through it and they vote. And we pray that they do for us again, as they did last week in the Mercy Housing case, that they listen to the testimony, go over the facts, adhere to the law, and find for the poor souls who are caught in between the rock and the hard place here. Thank
you're
you,
here. And good luck, and please get back to us with updates.
Oh, I certainly will. And thank you so very much, and thank you, Becky. And I want to thank you both for being there. I can't tell you how wonderful it was. I was on the stand when each of you one by one came in. It was so wonderful for me to have the faces of people, of the people of the community there for me. I just appreciate it so very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, it's wonderful to have people standing up for the rights that eventually all of us will enjoy because a few are taking the risk. It's an important process. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is the extended version of Bathrobs Piers Broadsides. Happens every Sunday from 10 to 1:30. Hoping we can actually get some mileage out of this equipment. Let's see how it's going. Yeah. Doesn't look like it's going. Technicians, take note. We need some help in the studio, so if you're around, come on down. Phone lines, however, are open. 427-3772. 427-3772 is the number to call. And we will talk to you. I'm scrambling for some more information here. I talked about a bit about the upcoming camping ban amendments that are on the City Council agenda, and I'm going to talk some more about them. Let's see what this caller has to say, though.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I was just not following orders.
Well, you better follow orders, LaMonica, if you know what's good for you.
Well, before I go any further, I agree to not say liberation obedience more than 5 times during this.
You can say it 6, but if you say it a 7th, I'm calling the police.
Yeah, I certainly don't want to offend the Free Radio Liberation Obedience Gestapo.
Well, there you are.
Or any other Gestapo, for that matter.
Well, certainly.
I have a point here about Catholic Healthcare West regarding abortions.
Right.
They have the right, in my opinion, to not provide abortion services.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking for an argument?
Well, you lean on them and use that as a case in point.
Well, I just note that a large organization, which I don't know how tax exempt they are with their connections with the Catholic Church, able to make seize a lot of what are maybe profit making activities or maybe public health hospitals, and essentially establish zones where it's very, very difficult for women who want to have abortions to get them.
Well, they can march right on down to Laurel Street and
well, I'm not talking about Santa Cruz. There are plenty of other places in the country where it's much more difficult.
I still will say that Catholic Healthcare West, in accordance with their philosophy and ideals, has the right to not provide abortion services on demand.
Alrighty. Well, I will accept that. By the way, I also was about to read the statewide housing rights movement update. I was thinking of trying to get a call through to John Eller or Brian Kettenring or maybe Amy Schur. I know you went to this convention last week.
In fact, they were all there.
Yeah. How did things go at the convention now that I've got you on the phone?
It's always good to impede cynicism by such gatherings. There were about 70 people there from all over California, from San Diego to San Francisco to Modesto.
Concerned about rent control, right?
Rent control and tenants' rights issues in general. There were 3 legislative aides that were there that addressed the group. I think it was very, very exciting. Some people that I had wanted to meet for years, Denny Zane from Santa Monica was there. Denny Zane was pivotal in Santa Monica's rent control ordinance and in their pedestrian mall ordinance, 2 issues that I have been fond of and remain fond of that I think fit Santa Cruz very well. By the way, there's always ways to dodge the rent control bullet by saying that it's been taken down several notches by Costa Hawkins, therefore we won't step up to the plate about it, that there isn't this or isn't that. The fact of the matter is that you could build affordable housing units all day long and you're still not going to reach the people that you will reach by implementing our rent control.
And let me interrupt you on that, because I actually was reviewing the Wednesday Talk About interview with Mayor Chris Crone, at which rent control, he didn't bring it up, and his host didn't bring it up, Michael Samet, unfortunately, but a caller brought it up, and he did exactly what you just said. He dodged it, mentioning, oh, Costa Hawkins means that's not really an option for us, we can't really, maybe we can talk about that, and so forth. In other words, the good work you did, and you're a man who 2 years ago circulated a petition to try to get just rent control as an advisory measure on the ballot, you couldn't get city council members to bring it up for a city council vote just to put on the ballot as an advisory measure.
I've said this to you off the radio, Robert. I don't dislike any of these folks. In fact, I think I'm quite fond of them.
You are much too tolerant there, Bob.
But if you think that they're charismatic firebrands or that they ever were intended to be charismatic firebrands, it's not going to happen.
Well, I don't know.
An issue like rent control, unless it's given to them on a platter or unless there's such incredible force coming down from above, it's not going to happen. I want to throw this in there.
Mm-hmm.
Back in
you're too nice to him, Bob.
Back in 99, land trust was floated as a reason why rent control was not necessary. We were going to have all these land trust units that were going to proliferate across our community, right? Mm-hmm. You remember that? There were going to be endless land trust units that were going to be manifested. And I'm not good at math, but we're talking 3 years down the road, and I don't know, how many land trust unit.
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that because, you know, the all the money being dumped into the Dolphin Lee Project for Mercy Charities housing means no money for the purchase of land for land trusts here in Santa Cruz. And apparently that was not properly explained to land trust people because they didn't attempt to go down and say, look, why isn't the city buying vacant property so that stuff can be built on it, whether it's subsidized housing or low-income housing or land trusts, anything. Instead, they just decided they'd give the whole boodle to Mercy Charities housing. I suppose that's better than giving it to Catholic Healthcare West, but, you know, not much better.
Santa Cruz is not alone in being able to present deflections. And in my opinion, the land trust ball was a deflection in 99, just like the Homeless Issues Task Force was a monumental deflection, along with being a paycheck for Don Lane.
The Homeless Issues Task Force, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, okay.
Although they came up with good recommendations, they were completely ignored, of course.
Now, back to rent control quickly. Yeah. I don't believe that Santa Monica or San Francisco or Berkeley or East Palo Alto, which have rent control, are going to dump their rent control because of Costa-Hawkins.
And briefly explain what Costa-Hawkins, that's vacancy decontrol means...
Among other things, vacancy
right.
decontrol and
now, what that means to those of you,
dwellings are exempt and condos are exempt.
Exempts condos, exempts what three families or three people or less dwellings, and also, in other words, they took the rent control that was in force in certain cities and said you cannot have you know, if there are three units or less, is that what it is?
Single-family dwellings.
Single-family dwellings can't...
And condos, which qualify as single-family dwellings.
They can't
dwellings.
Be regulated. They exempted those, and they also said if you move out of a building, then the landlord can jack up the rent all she or
that's,
he wants.
That's vacancy decontrol.
Vacancy decontrol.
All right. Now, yeah. I say, to look at it from this perspective, these things have so moderated rent control that it would seem that a rational person would find the argument for rent control to be very credible. In that the landlord can jack up the rent to whatever they want when the tenant moves out. Rent control, quite simply defined, is that your rent is protected while you're there. Your rent is regulated by law. Rent control regulates residential rent increases while a tenant resides in the regulated unit.
So you got to have a just eviction law in there too to help out.
It's generally built in to a good rent control ordinance like Berkeley, like Santa Monica, like San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that would go hand in hand. And the fact of the matter is that I've heard this multiple times. If you can't afford to live here, move out.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it, in fact, yesterday. If you can't afford to live here, move out. Mm-hmm. And what I say to that is, you know, what about the low-income workers? What about the hamburger flipper at Jack's? What's the solution? Are we going to keep waving this free market flag? And I believe in the free market, okay? I do, and I believe that there is that capitalism has its place.
Well, it's like it's like the free press, Bob. It's free for anyone who owns one.
The other alternative, if you put all your eggs in one basket you start mummifying Lenin. You end up with Tass telling you what's right, and like China now, you end up with having the internet. Filtered, and you go to jail if they find out.
I don't think
we
need to choose either the devil or the deep blue sea. We got other
alternatives. There you go. So, I mean, I agree with that. Okay, mm-hmm. we don't put all our eggs in one basket. We look at checks and balances. We look at a private-public mix. But I am kind of thrown by such a thing as rent control still being such an incredible hot potato where it can't
well,
be discussed.
Then you've got to stop being so nice to these city council members who are very amiable with you, Bob, but don't want to do shit for the public.
Now,
that's the problem.
What may happen? No promises here, but Santa Cruz remains a very finely looked at community from across the state, is that there is considerable interest in a rent control forum here in Santa Cruz that would be drawing upon some very well-known people from across the state to come here.
Mm-hmm. Including Randy Silverman of the Berkeley Rent Control.
Including Randy, board. Including some folks from Santa Monica, including some folks from San Francisco.
Maybe Seaside and San Jose?
And yes. In fact, they were there in Oakland 2 weeks ago.
Any updates on what's happening in those cities, by the way?
There is just cause ordinances being floated in Oakland. They tried to do a ballot measure and lost several years ago. These things don't tend to go away because they're so basic. Let me say this in some good way again. Mm-hmm. If you don't own property in Santa Cruz County and in the Bay Area in general, unless you inherit money or there is a loophole provided for you. You're not going to own property. And all people say that are into the tenants' rights movement is that people that are tenants deserve some respect. And we're not going to turn the clock back 500 years and go back to feudalism, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the fact that you can vote now without owning property should make a light go off in people's minds. Because the next step, the most honest step, and I believe that tenants' rights is one of the key civil rights issues of our time,
mm-hmm.
You should be protected from unreasonable gouges. If you are a tenant and you pay your rent on time, and the landlord signed you in at a certain amount of rent, you should be protected from a gouge, from the unreasonable wiles of the market.
Hear, hear. Tell me, have you done much research as to rent control in other countries? I've never really heard that discussed much.
It's prevalent in Europe,
hmm.
but they have a different perspective of society.
Mm-hmm.
Canada, the entire province of Ontario has rent control.
Mm-hmm.
This is not some wild, let's bring Lenin's tomb to the town clock idea. Okay? It's just simply not.
I think Lenin's tomb is at the town clock.
It's no more wild than the idea that we should regulate electricity.
Doug Rand's tomb is at the
okay?
town clock.
Nobody complains. None of the SCAN steering committee stands up against regulating utilities that I know of. But they don't have the courage and the principle and the integrity to represent those individuals that cannot own property mm-hmm. in this community.
Now,
just because they do. And I want to drop some names here, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Cynthia Matthews.
Ooh.
Celia Scott.
Ah.
Bernice Belt.
You're getting a little scared
here,
Bob.
They own property. They own nice property. And
they're in position
Marty
of power,
Wormhouse.
Too. Our supervisor now. Come on,
right.
I don't want to criticize Marty now.
I could go on and on with this list.
You know, let me ask you this though, Bob. You were talking about putting together some kind of a forum. Is there a number people can call if they want to help with this?
Sure, they can call 466-0500.
466-0500.
And we'd be shooting for sometime in the late spring.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I raised it at the meeting in Oakland. There's considerable interest, as I said before. Santa Cruz retains this image of idealism. In many ways, it's correct. Santa Cruz is a pretty interesting town.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have, it's less apolitical than other places. Okay, but I find it interesting that such an issue like this as rent control would be so effectively dodged by those that really should be running with the ball. Now, where we're at in 2002 with tenants' rights is that tenants' rights equals affordable housing. That's the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is off the map. Everything else is too hot. Everything else can't even be discussed above board.
Gotcha.
Okay, so what we're saying is that we're going to live in this capitalistic fantasy land where low-income workers live in welfare housing. I use that word selectively, and I'm not against affordable housing,
you know,
by the way.
I'm realizing, well, you're probably preaching a lot to a lot of the converted.
I hear you, but there are others that listen to your show, Robert,
yeah, mm-hmm.
and they listen intentively to your show.
Okay, well, I hope
I haven't called in your show in a long time.
Yeah, no.
And I haven't said liberation obedience.
You can say that a number of times.
15
you better say that a few times.
In all likelihood, if it can be organized where it has a chance to be taken seriously, otherwise I don't want to bother with it at all, there will be a rent control forum sometime later this year. There will be a sincere attempt at providing one. I thought that what happened up in Oakland a few weeks ago was very significant. These issues tend to not get the press and the political interest because it's generally people without money. It's not the property people,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's not the people pad your wallet for you. And that happens locally, too. You got to ask yourself, why don't these so-called progressives step up to the plate with something as rational and moderate as rent control? Where do they get their funding from?
Well, listen, I want to thank you for making this clear to us, and I hope you continue to make it clear and give us continued updates, and I hope folks join your... Well, I certainly am going to be supportive of this effort of a forum this spring. 466-0500 is the number. 466-0500 is the number to call to speak to Bob LaMonica and sign in to help with a rent control forum, and I hope you do. And, Bob, keep us tuned and give us your summation now. And you may say liberation
I'm right on the edge. I might have crossed my five times.
Well, I'll give you one more chance.
Let me just say this, too.
Liberation obedience is all right.
There are certain issues that retain my interest. And one of the reasons why is that they're so, for some reason or other, hot that people that run around claiming to be progressive refuse to deal with them because they think they're going to lose. And if they can't win, they're not going to touch it unless it's handed to them on a platter.
That's the spirit.
So I figure without some people addressing these things in our fair community, they're never going to be given even a marginal chance.
I have to agree with you. In fact, I'll agree with you again, but I'm afraid that you said liberation obedience one time too many. I'm going to have to cut you off here.
Robert, take care.
All right.
All right, see you.
Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, that rent control forum. Again, if you want to get in touch and help out with that forum, 466-0500. You want to call us and let us know what's happening, maybe send a tech into the studio to help deal with this dead cassette player, give a call to 427-3772, 427-FRSC. This is 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz. And I am Robert Norris. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, your civil rights on the streets show, in your face, out of your radio, and hopefully we'll get into the community and do something. And that's what's happening. I was going to actually give a lot of taped stuff, very good taped stuff, on interviews downtown around the seizure of private property. A couple of weeks ago, I was circulating a petition called the Action Petition for Diversity and Tolerance Downtown. It encouraged reversing the city council vote of January 8th, destroying the public seating area at Hippie Planter and handing over that area to Alibaba's Cafe and Sushi Now. It asked that the council end the downtown ordinances, which criminalize peaceful, non-obstructive sitting on the sidewalk 10 feet from a shop and 50 feet from an ATM. It asked to explore instead a downtown code of conduct or downtown mediation project, as proposed in a $10,000 study funded and written by the city council. It was funded by the city council. It was written by Kim Hallinan and Daniel Rubin in 1995, and also to allow the display and sale of crafts on Santa Cruz sidewalks as Berkeley and Eugene has done. Making these changes may require, according to this petition, peaceful, nonviolent demonstrations downtown, including sit-ins, boycotting businesses intent on privatizing downtown public spaces, monitoring police harassment of poor and homeless people, and supporting legal challenges against repressive laws and policies. And for a couple of days, I and Bernard Klitzner, Becky Johnson, a few others were out there gathering signatures on this petition, gathering support. Yesterday after, well, the next thing that I did was I drew up a set of guidelines, which I believe I read on the show about a week ago, both suggestions from the Sushi Now merchant Matisse Selman and from people at the Planter from both sides of the issue. What are the concerns of both sides? How can they be mediated? And I kind of laid them all out. The folks at the Planter were willing to do some mediating, and Matisse Selman said he was, but he never got back to me on the email. And after a while, I began to believe that he said I got to get a new computer, or maybe he's not so serious about it. And in fact, I think that last is really the answer. Matisse often listens to this show, and if I'm wrong, Matisse, you certainly can call in and make your opinion known, and I welcome you to do that. My understanding now is, though, that you and Ali Ka, also known as Alibaba, who runs Alibaba's Cafe, have decided you're going to just go with this done deal at City Council, wall off the area, put up this, I guess, brass railing that will eliminate the Hippie Planter scene and replace it with some nice green tables, which people who pay money for sushi and falafel can sit at, and others who don't have the money won't be able to sit at, unless, of course, they get the permission of the two owners to use the public sidewalk. I'm going to assume that you have decided you're going to go with this, I've got to say, rather outrageous hijacking of public space. Engineered by the Downtown Association, probably supported by big businesses down there, large businesses like, I suspect New Leaf may be involved, and I don't have proof of that. The manager denies it. Anyway, I wrote this boycott petition, which I'm now going to be circulating and asking for people to sign. And it's not really so much to show to City Council or even to Sushi Now and Alibaba's, but to actually get some action on. And the petition reads as follows. Is it time to boycott the businesses whose backroom deals will kill hippie planter and hippie corner? Say no to merchant seizure of public sidewalks. Both Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe have agreed to a redevelopment agency downtown association scheme to rid the city of the youth scene in front of the New Leaf Market without meaningful public input, public debate, or public process. Sushi Now owner Matisse Selman acknowledged that it was his constant pressure that prompted this sidewalk giveaway, which will bar sitting down anywhere on the sidewalk or planters throughout the previously public area in front of New Leaf Market and the adjoining stores. Note that this isn't just the area that's being walled off that people will not be able to sit in. You will not be able to sit on the sidewalk 10 feet from any business area, and that will include the entire area in front of New Leaf completely. You'll have to stand there. You will not be able to sit. It's a deliberate attack on a gathering spot, and a deliberate attack on a bunch of people, some of whom need to sit down. You know, some of the folks are older there. Most of them are younger, I admit. But, hey, even younger people need to sit down. This is an attempt to say, there is no place for you here. Get out. This is wrong. And has been pointed out by Kim, the Sentinel letter writer. This is not in accord with the traditional values of Santa Cruz. And it also, I think, it is counterproductive to businesses downtown, too. It's kind of ironic. They want to scapegoat homeless people because of the recession and because of other economic conditions that they don't want to address or they can't address. And Kim Bingham is completely right, and I can't agree with her more. New Leaf Market Management has denied their involvement in this Get Rid of the Hippies scheme, but New Leaf has not made any public protest against the social cleansing and is suspected of secretly backing it with a possible expansion in mind into the kiosks and into the nearby stores. This may be part of City Council's plan to create a gentrified zone pleasing consultants and city staff near the former Del Mar Theater, which is being handed over to George Au and Barry Swenson, who are promising only 36 days per year of public use. So 90% of the time they get it for private use. Though expressing sympathy for a proposed code of conduct which would allow the public to use the public sidewalk there, Selman and Alibaba's Cafe owner Ali Ka have not returned emails or publicly committed themselves to this process. The code of conduct would address behavioral problems and concerns on all sides. The Street Performers Guideline, an earlier such code of conduct, has been successfully used for 20 years to voluntarily regulate disputes between merchants, musicians, activists, and artists on Pacific Avenue, in spite of the abusive no-sitting downtown ordinances passed in 1994 by Scott Kennedy, I might add. Voluntary understandings between drummers and residents in 1996 and marimba players and police in 2001 worked out disputes without court or council interference. Though the young people being displaced will probably move on to another spot on Pacific Avenue, though there are a few such plaza-like places, residents, customers, and community members must draw the line against such merchant monopolization. Previously, farmers market harassment of drummers, activists, and street vendors was only curbed by direct action that involved arrests and loud protest. And actually, that's not quite accurate because wasn't direct action usually indicates potentially peaceful but illegal behavior. My behavior, and I was the one who was arrested, was completely legal. I was simply petitioning the farmers market to stop harassing the drummers and fencing off the space. And the farmers market manager, Janet Blazer, a retired food critic from the Sentinel, apparently went through the roof and had the police called, and I was twice arrested, and she tried to get an injunction against me, and all this, of course, fell down in a heap, as this attack on hippie planter should fall down in a heap. New Leaf Market should be acting to deal with this issue. It's sitting there with its eyes closed and its mouth gagged and its ears, hands over its ears. That just doesn't wash, folks. Ask New Leaf Market if they're going to take action to stop this fascist activity in front of their store. And if they're not, tell them, try another community with this bullshit. Thank you very much, New Leaf. I like, you know, your organic veggies, but I'm more concerned with a little organic process here, a little freedom, a little basic civil rights for poor people around. And if you don't want to do that, go peddle your organic stuff to some other wealthy, healthy folks somewhere else. That's my thought on that issue. Phone number here, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Anyway, that's one side of this petition. Sign the boycott petition to encourage Sushi Now, Alibaba's Cafe, and other any other NIMBY businesses to maintain public spaces for all. And then what the actual petition says is this. It's very simple. All is sort of the prologue of the petition that I've just read. I pledge not to purchase at Alibaba's Cafe or Sushi Now until those businesses enter into good faith negotiations to maintain the public sidewalk in public hands and find a way of resolving differences that does not involve evicting one group of people from the area entirely. Any suggestions or thoughts? Hey, phone lines are open, 427-3772. Free Radio Santa Cruz awaits your call. And while you're waiting, let's hear this.
When I awoke one morning, there was a feeling in the air. Everything was quiet, things were different everywhere. The Wobblies were back again with Joe Hill at the mic, when all the minimum wage workers went on strike. There was no one pumping gasoline, no one driving from town to town, no one at the registers. All the highways were shut.